One can say that, in fact, our breath is our breath of life. When we're not breathing anymore, we're dead. It's the breath that is not just the signal that we are alive, but it is the very condition of life itself. The breath of God is our breath. So one can say that, in effect, that we are physically connected to God through our breath. When God, in the Psalms, very often, God will say, I pull my breath back, and the person dies. Without the breath of God in them, there is no life. And so here, we are told that we must attend to our breath as a way of honoring the Spirit that gives us life. And I'm going to suggest a way that we will do that. We can do that this morning. When we attend to our breath, we are attending to that place, to that, not a place. When we attend to our breath, we are attending to that connection between ourselves and God. Now, most of us never think about this. We just go through our life. We breathe, I don't know how many, I once knew how many breaths a day the average person breathed, but I've forgotten that along with half of the other things I've known. But the breath is so fundamental to us. We can be blind, we can be deaf, we can be lame, we can be halt, we can be all kinds of things that are negative, but if we have no breath, we have nothing. If we have our breath, we are connected directly to God. How do we honor the Spirit of God in our breath? I'm going to suggest there is some ancient ways that people have found and with some modern twists. For us to focus on the breath is to make it possible for the Spirit of God to create in us. The other part of the theme throughout the Bible, wherever the Spirit is mentioned, it almost always, not just life, but creativity. The Spirit is the source of human creativity. Artists will tell you this all the time, that they don't just invent, that something comes out of them and creates something new. And that is this connection with the Holy Spirit, creating the breath of God and creating new works of art even. By focusing on our breath, we get ourselves ready for the intimacy of God's presence. When we focus on our breath, we start to clear up the cluttered mind. Anytime you sit down and you try and clear your mind, what's the first thing that happens? You're suddenly aware of all the things that are going on in your head constantly that you don't even notice because you're usually busy doing other things. But now, once you quiet down, what happens? All of these chattering things come into your mind and they won't let you go. And the harder you try, the worse it gets. But that is one of the joys of attending to our breath. By attending to our breath, we start to quieten ourselves. Now, we know physically that this action of attending to our breath has very strong, measurable consequences for human health. If you have high blood pressure, if you have heart disease of any kind, one of the first things they'll tell you is you should start doing breathing exercises, something like what the ancient church has been doing for 2,000 years. The doctor will tell you, no, I want you to do these exercises, and these are breathing exercises. And one of the first things you learn, and we're going to practice it, one of the first things you learn, you experience, is that first there's a kind of rush of activity. There's even a little bit of the heart rate might even pick up because you're kind of nervous about doing this in front of other people. And maybe you even shake a little bit because you're nervous. And so instead of something that's calming, it seems to be more anxiety-making. But if you stick with it, just keep practicing attending to the breath, it goes away. And increasingly, you become calmer, your blood pressure goes down, and you start attending to the Spirit that God has given you. This act, this attending to the breathing, is the first step toward intimate prayer, which is the basis for our intimate relationship with God. God is not just a commander. God is not just the one who gives rules that we must obey. God is the one who calls us into relationship, who calls us into relationship with God to make our life what it was meant to be. When God gave us that first breath in the hospital or wherever we were born, that was the beginning of the promise. And all through our lives, we have continued to breathe, thanking God for this gift that he has given. Now we're going to practice a little bit before we get into the rest of the sermon. What we're going to do is do the very, very simple breathing exercise, which just starts to quiet us down. It helps provide focus for us. And we're going to do this for a few minutes, and then we're going to look at a text, and we're going to take the next step toward this intimacy with God. So the first thing we're going to do is close your eyes, and you get comfortable. It's important to be comfortable in your seat. You sit up straight. It's important to sit up straight and tall, but be comfortable. You may want to put your hands in your lap or fold them or on your knees. Doesn't really matter. Just so you're comfortable. It's important to be comfortable, not to where you're falling asleep. If you do fall asleep, which sometimes happens, that's a sign you need more sleep. Right? And so it's okay if you fall asleep. Just go right ahead. And if you start to snore, your neighbor will poke you. So what we'll do is we'll close our eyes. We'll get comfortable. We'll close our eyes. And we'll notice our breath. First thing we'll notice is we breathe in and we breathe out. Breathe in and breathe out. And what I'm going to ask you to do to really bring your mind to it is to take a deep intake of breath, as deep as you can, and then let it go out. And we're going to do this maybe 8 or 10 times. And what I'll ask you to do to make it easier and to help clear the chatter is, here's what I do. I take a deep breath and I count the beats in my breath. So I'll go, and I'll get up to 10. And then I'll exhale. And I'll count again the exhale. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. And for me, what always happens is my intake, I can get to 10. My outgo, my outtake is more. If my intake is 10, my out breath is usually 12. So what I want to do, I'll keep breathing until they're about the same. 10 in, 10 out. 10 in, 10 out. If you don't want to count, it doesn't matter. You don't need to. So close our eyes, get comfortable, sit up straight, close our eyes, and take a deep intake of breath. And then let it out. All the way out. All the way. Just listen. In, Okay, slowly open your eyes as you're led. No rush. Now let's turn to that hymn that we sang earlier, hymn number on page 9. We're going to look just at the first verse. This is a hymn by a famous 20th century poet and playwright by the name of Olaf Hartmann from Sweden. He also wrote many hymns. By choosing not to let your divinity crown you with glory, by being human, living in poverty, we know who God is. It may be a little hard to understand. By choosing, now this is a prayer to God, prayer to Jesus. By choosing, there's a recognition that there was a choice. That when God chose, when Jesus chose to give up divinity, he chose you. He chose me. When Jesus is choosing, what is he choosing? He is choosing to give up divinity for us. The choice is for us. He lets his divinity, instead of crowning him with glory, that's the expectation. Read certain passages in the scripture, particularly in the book of Revelation, there's a sense that Jesus is the victor, the conqueror, the one who was the great king, and there are images of putting robes on him, putting crown, and of course, what does that make you think of? Robes and crown on Jesus. Does that make you think of anything?
Kingship.
Anything else?
The passion.
There, he's arrested, he's in Pilate's court, and Pilate hands Jesus over to the soldiers, and what do? They beat him, they put a cloak on him as a fake king, and they put a crown of thorns on his head to humiliate him all the more. So here, Hartmann is saying, by choosing us instead of divinity, you have chosen the human. You've chosen to be human. More than that, you lived in poverty. You lived in exile. You lived in disgrace. You lived in humiliation. You lived in grief. And you lived in gladness. These are all ways in which Jesus, by descending into our human vulnerability, by descending into our lives, Jesus experiences what we experience: loneliness, disgrace, exile, sadness, grief, and also gladness. These are the gifts that we give to Jesus. It's our experience we offer to Jesus, who comes into our life to share our life, to become fundamentally human. Ever since this event, Christians can no longer ever speak about God as God alone, but only about God with us, only about God in our midst, only about God amongst us. Because now what Jesus has done is he has brought divinity into our world and cast off all of the normal trappings of divinity and instead takes on our life and says thereby that God, who I bring into this world, is always among us. God is with us. We no longer can talk about God by himself. It's only God with us. Now I'd like you to look at this hymn again. And there's an ancient form of prayer and prayer preparation called Lectio Divina. Does anybody know that? No? Okay. Good. Now I can say anything and it'll be just fine. Lectio Divina is a sacred reading of a sacred text. So what we're going to do is we're going to read this text silently to ourselves and just read it over, the one verse, over and over and over again until it kind of sinks into your consciousness. And then after we do that for a little bit, I'm going to ask you to do something else. So let's start. Just read it again and again. Don't try and figure it all out. Just let it, just read it. Now I'm going to read the reverse of this. And notice how different it really is. By not choosing to let your divinity crown you with glory, by not being human or living in poverty, we know who God is. Now this is the complete reversal of the first of the way Olaf Hartmann wrote it. If Jesus did not choose to become human, if Jesus did not choose to take on our life, if Jesus did not choose to live in our poverty, we would not know who God is. Instead, we would have the God of our culture, the God of our society, the God of our politics tell us who God is, because without this movement of Jesus choosing us, the God that we would be presented with is the God of power and might and glory and crushing his opponents above all other people. That is the God of our culture. It's the God of our society. We worship power. We love power. And we love power so much that if we're going to have a God, we want that God to have all the power there possibly is. It's exactly the reverse of what this passage is. Now I'm going to ask you to take a phrase out of the hymn, and on the in-breath say, for example, on the in-breath, living in poverty, the out-breath, we know who God is. And if you don't like that, you can use anything else. You can say living in sorrow. Perhaps you've been struggling with grief, living in grief. Perhaps you have fear, living in fear. This is where Christ is, and that's how we know who God is. So on the in-breath, living in whichever you choose, living in poverty, on the out-breath, we know who God is. In-breath, out-breath. Deep breaths. Okay.
Let's come back together. And let's sing the hymn, the first verse, one more time.
The extraordinary thing is, we know who God is because God takes his place in our midst. It is through our experience of Jesus Christ that we embrace and are embraced by the love and joy of God.